Welcome to the Talking Transformation podcast. I'm your podcast host, Peter Ahmad, recording from Cape Town, South Africa, since June 2019. The Talking Transformation podcast provides an open and accessible platform for built environment professionals and interest groups to share their reflections and aspirations relating to the transformation of places and spaces in South Africa. It's intended to be a celebration of the individuals and community groups who are supporting formal and informal processes that are addressing the challenges of South Africa's history and shaping the future of our neighbourhoods and cities. We are fast approaching the end of 2023, and this is quite likely to be one of the last, if not the last, Talking Transformation podcast of the year. If it is the last, it's certainly one I've enjoyed recording, particularly the time shared with the Citra construction team. I was first made aware of the unique building typologies in and around the Blue Downs area in the early 2020s. Central Blue, E-State and E-Houses certainly didn't look like the conventional housing project or product, or subscribe to many of the design concepts that I'm familiar with. I've been intrigued by the thinking behind the units and the design ever since. And when I met the managing director and co-founder of Citra, Joel Bauer, on site a couple of months ago, he confessed to being a listener to the podcast. And of course, I invited him and members of the team to reflect on the Citra journey and the development philosophy. What exactly was different, and how does their thinking challenge convention and the principles of many affordable housing and middle-income housing developments and projects? How can their approaches translate into efficiencies and savings and costs to keep costs low and the selling price within the reach of their target markets? I've been honored Cheryl Hillman, Director of Development, for a good number of years to share their story more widely. And through this podcast, I'm delighted that we now have a detailed conversation covering inspirational Genesis stories, the numerous challenges faced by a fledgling construction company, and the identity and construction processes that didn't quite fit the original mold of, amongst others, the NHBRC, or National Home Builders Registration Council. We learn from the head of design, Nicole Fivier, of the design enhancements and considerations that have informed the different phases of housing, and we conclude with lessons that Joel took from his recent attendance at the African Union for Housing Finance Conference in Windhoek, Namibia, a couple of weeks ago. There's a lot to get through, so without further delay, here are the Citra 3, Cheryl, Joel, and Nicole. As always, we hope you enjoy the episode. So it's Friday, December the 1st, 2023, the first day of the last month of the year. I can hardly believe December, that 2023 is gone. Absolutely delighted to be here Friday morning at the Citra head offices in Century City. Also delighted to be joined by three of the main movers and shakers in that space. I've got Joel Bowyer, I've got Nicole Fivier, and Cheryl Hillman. Welcome to all three of you, and thanks so much for hosting me in your boardroom this morning. Joel, how are you keeping?
Thank you very much. It's a big honor to have you here. It's been a very intense year, a very exciting year, a lot of great milestones that we hit with the team. Yeah, there's been a lot of changes.
Looking forward to hearing about some of those achievements and what's planned for 2024. I know you guys never seem to stop, so looking forward to hearing about that, Joel. Cheryl, tell me a bit about your role in all of these achievements, and maybe looking back at 2023 and thinking forward to 2024.
Pete, yeah, 2023 has been busy. As Joel said, we have ramped up our rollout quite considerably this year. We had 10 projects that are in various stages of development, either planning or construction. We finished 111 apartments, another 100 odd townhouses, row houses, and 50 odd freestanding units so far. So it's been a busy year at Central Blue.
And your role in all this?
I'm the development director. I handle development from land purchase through planning, with my team, of course, through the planning process and into construction, as well as sales and marketing. So it's quite a wide range of responsibilities we have there in our team.
Fantastic. And Nicole,
Is it fair to call you the brains of the design and these amazing initiatives? They look different. They certainly sort of, when you go on the ground, they feel different as much as look. Tell us a bit about your role and again, just a bit of a reflection on the year that's gone.
Peter, I am the head of design at Citra. We've had an amazing year. We have won a Housie Award for our e-homes and we've won the Big Five National Award for Leaders in Technology. And we are on our way to Dubai to represent Citra at the Big Five Global Awards to hopefully snatch the award for the Leaders in Technology in the global arena. So, yeah. Well,
congratulations, it sounds like you say. And not just the busy, but certainly an award-winning year in that regard. Great stuff, Nicole. Just for, again, the benefit of the listeners, when you talk about an e-home, what is the E standing for?
From my point of view, the E stands for the technology. We are an alternative building technology company. It is creating homes that are different and inspiring.
Yeah, for me, the E stands primarily for environmentally friendly because it is a big driver of everything we do. And it's an e-home because it is trying to bring back the notion of nature into architecture and design. It's as well, when you look at our designs that are looking very different, they have that organic shape to it, round curves, things like that. And so the E is as well, in terms of environment, trying to bring that into the name of the product as well.
These issues of environment, sustainability, resilience, there are many buzzwords in the built environment. In terms of the Citra's philosophy, maybe tell us a bit about what the design looks like, why it's different. You've talked about curves, but curves in what respect? Mm. And how is that different from the typical South African sense of a house, a residential stand or flats or something like that?
So what Citra aims at doing is really achieve something that has not yet been achieved in the history of mankind, which is that a entry-level construction worker must be able to afford the house that he's building. And that is true in most other industries, car manufacturing, the person that cleans the floor in the car factory can buy an entry-level car. Same in any other factory as well. It's not the case in construction globally. The way we think we can achieve that is by rethinking the way that a house is built from the ground up. And that starts with the materials that we use. It carries on with how the materials are then put together and then how they come together in a design of a house. And then obviously carries through to urban scale, which is where the development portion comes in. We're trying to think every element along the value chain and try to make it better, more affordable, and more sustainable. Now, where the organic portion in terms of the design comes in is while I was studying architecture in Switzerland, I lived in a 700-year-old building in an old town somewhere in Switzerland. And what is very interesting there is that no wall was straight. All the walls were somehow, you could see how they were like put together by humans just with their hands. And at some point during studying, I asked a professor of theory of architecture, why is that? Why were they not able to build straight walls at the time? And the answer was very interesting, is that the ruler and the straight line were effectively inventions of the Renaissance. It was obviously the Romans and the Greek, they were building in straight lines, but that was something that was then lost and is something that does not exist in vernacular architecture. So at that time, 700 years ago in Europe, the construction that was going on was without any straight lines. Straight lines came back as a concept with Renaissance and then got into a real boom with the Industrial Revolution, where it all went into linear production from where we have all the straight lines today, because everything is produced in a linear production manner. Your steel beams, your timber beams, your bricks, all of those things are square, they're straight. That is something that is not actually natural. It's not something that humans, if you look at how humans build when they don't overthink it, how they naturally build, which is the vernacular architecture, or in South Africa, more like tribal traditional architecture, that is all organic shapes with curves to it. And that is what we think that we can now bring back, because with modern technology, you can still produce in an industrialized manner without sticking to linear production. With CNC technology, with robotics, with finite element models, it's now possible to design, produce, and build in organic, more natural ways, and actually make it cheaper, because nature is extremely efficient. So if you learn from nature and you don't stick to straight lines, but you do lines that are efficient from a structural manner, from a structural point of view, it's cheaper to build, it feels nicer, it looks nicer.
And I guess that represents, Nicola, a big break in what we used to hear in South Africa, where, again, particularly if you think about in a more affordable product post-1994, you can almost imagine what a house looks like, whether it's state-subsidized or an affordable entry-level house. That must bring with it this idea of a disruption to that, going back to the very, very roots that Joel's talked about. How have you found that a challenge in the design and the ability ultimately, and maybe Cheryl, you can come in on the back of that, around the marketing of that to the community and saying, you know, is this something that's going to sell? But at the same time, how do you make that appealing? And what's the response been like in terms of the design progress?
Architecture seems to be one of the design industries where everything has gone to a straight lines and that's all we use. But if you look at how people use everything around them and everything is designed, it is with curves. Your handles, your chairs, all the products that we use normally has curves because that's how we use it. So it's more natural to have a building that also accentuates that, the way we live. In the Blue Downs community, these homes have become an icon. It is something that people look to see, oh, those are the Citra homes, you know. It has become something that speaks for itself in that community. And we always try and improve our designs and make it better with every design that we put out. So even though the eHomes have won the Housie Award, in the eHomes 2.0 that we are doing next year, we've improved that design tremendously already by creating a better exterior space that is more usable for the client, where they can park their car underneath the double volume roof. More to that, the way the roof curves into the walls, it creates a sense of safety and being embraced, especially in the children's room. It makes you feel safe, and that's what's important, and that's also the response that we get from the clients. I think one of the clients said that they feel safe and they feel at home, and that's what's important to us.
That's wonderful. And again, Cheryl, is this the sort of thing that you're seeing in terms of the marketing, the response that you've had phase by phase, the differentiation in design, the learning from each phase? Is this now really starting to take off there?
The houses speak for themselves. And obviously in the beginning, we had to do more aggressive marketing. But we got to the point where when we had finished that phase of eHomes, we already had a waiting list and demand for the next phase. So the more product we actually build, the better accepted it becomes by the communities around, you know, who are looking to buy homes in the area. In terms of learning from a development point of view, obviously our learning has been more along rollout, speeding up delivery, the whole idea of it being a sustainable, affordable product is that we want to be able to do volumes, but make it more affordable than conventional structures and be able to put it up quicker than conventional, because then we can actually deliver to the housing market where the need is. And those have been the challenges we've been working on this year in terms of learning lessons and redefining the product, a lot of R&D to actually get to that point where it is now cheaper than conventional and the shell can go up quicker. So I think we've come quite far this year in that process.
So again, the speed and these design efficiencies ultimately translating into an affordability element.
Yes. Yeah.
Fantastic. Joel, if we think about this journey that you've been on, I remember seeing these Blue Downs units going up maybe 2-3 years ago, maybe just before COVID. Time gets blurry around that period. Tell us a bit about what brought you this side. I always think about these things as a genesis story, but what brought Citra here? Here you are, a professional who's joined us from Europe, from the Swiss background you've talked about. What brought you here, and how does this whole sort of model work in terms of its funding? Because it's not just a sort of conventional development and construction company, as I understand it.
So Citra, we started in 2015 while I was busy with my master's degree in Switzerland still. And together with the two co-founders, we sat together and discussed ideas how one could have quick reconstruction after a natural disaster. For example, the earthquake in Haiti in 2012. The idea was at the time to develop a building system based on expanded polystyrene, which when you transport the raw material in a container, for example, and you would then expand it into the final material that you need for construction on site, say on Haiti, you could with one container of raw material have, I don't remember the calculations, but an insane amount of houses in really high quality. With that, we rethink the shell of a house. We rethink the external envelope of a house to make it better and cheaper and more sustainable and extremely quick in construction. That was the starting point. While we were talking about how to test it and how to develop this into a product that is not just almost like a new colonialist idea from Switzerland, although Switzerland never colonized any country, but that it's not a European idea that we plunk over a developing country after a disaster. To make it a more grassroots thing, we decided that we have to actually develop the product in a country where it could actually be used as well. And that is where I then decided together with my wife that we would move down to South Africa after we did some global market research, which would be the most suitable country to start developing the product and test it in the market. We came to the conclusion South Africa is the right country. My wife and me decided that Cape Town looks nice enough.
Lots to like about Cape Town, indeed, yeah.
Yes. When I finished my studies in 2016, late 2015, early 2016, we sold our stuff in Switzerland and arrived with one bag each here in Cape Town in March 2016. And then the first 6 months I was working from pizzerias in Greenpoint and every day meeting people from government, from the industry, like just talking to everyone that would be crazy enough to answer my call and to learn as much as possible and really like put together ultimately a business plan to try and attract investment into this idea on the back of as much information, local information as possible. And then lucky enough with that business plan, the co-founders that stayed in Switzerland and myself were able to raise initial funding to actually start developing the technology and the product here in South Africa.
It's truly a remarkable story. I mean, if you think about it, it's less than a decade. You've had two solid years of COVID sort of within that of disruption. And still, you're moving through your phases. You're moving through the different expansion plans there in Blue Downs. And perhaps, Cheryl, if we come to Blue Downs, can you tell us a bit about why that as a location is such an important sort of central focus for Citra? What's the benefits of the sites that you've accumulated and assembled in that space?
Our first point when looking for a site is that we want to be able to roll out with a certain amount of mass or volume. It's got to be large enough to really have an effect on the market. Part of our kind of vision behind development is that how do we create sustainability within a development? We're not looking to do just cookie cutter apartments in a parking lot. We look for infill sites, which have been developed around, have an existing community around, have certain number of schools, transport links, all of those good things. Hospitals are there. So basic needs are met. There are shopping centers, etc., around the site. Within the site itself, we want to be able to have a large enough area that we can provide in the site public open spaces, recreation spaces, places for people, schools. We have a school site as well. So school sites, commercial sites, shopping centers. So literally what we would like to create is that you generally don't even have to leave your site to go elsewhere for school, for shops. We even have an incubator hub so you can work from the site. You can rent office space, there's a little internet cafe, there's a restaurant. So all those things keep the whole project sustainable so that it feeds off itself. So economically, a lot of the money gets spent in that area, in that development. So I think that is one of the things we look for when we identify a site is, can we do all of this on that site? And then we take it a step further in terms of our sustainability approach as part of this. For us, sustainability is bigger than environmental sustainability. That is important, and that's your first step in the tier. But we consider social and economic sustainability equally important. So social sustainability is created by having those public open spaces, by having the schools, by creating a community. And you need a large enough site to be able to do that, to create a community of people who can be proud and say, I live at, in this instance, Central Blue. It's changing the face of Blue Downs. And from an economic sustainability point of view, it's bigger than just our development, because we make sure that we involve the community around our site and employ a certain ratio of general labor from the areas around the site. So we're creating jobs in the area. The money is going back into the area. So I think all that is very important, and we try and keep with that model wherever we are developing.
For the benefit of the listeners who are not from Cape Town, tell us a bit about that location of Blue Downs in relation to, for example, the airport, Somerset West, okay, etc., Khayelitsha.
It's, I would say, about halfway between the airport and Stellenbosch, maybe a bit closer to the airport. It's only 10 kilometers from the airport. So Central Blue is an infill site in Blue Downs. Blue Downs is a mainly residential area in the Western Cape, as I said, close to the airport. A LSM 8, I would say, for our listeners, that's a sort of a middle class sector of society. There are some poorer areas, which are LSM 6, 7 as well, pockets of poorer areas. And it is the affordable market space that is where most of your people who are in the affordable market, and the affordable market obviously is an end user market. It's not your social housing. It's an end user market or a rental market for people who are earning salaries, I'm going to go of an average of 25,000.
So you're beyond the sort of the finance linked individual subsidy.
Some of our product does fall in the FLSP range. The thing with FLSP is it's got some very specific requirements in terms of you have to be a first time homeowner, and I think you have to earn under a certain hurdle
within a threshold of
above. So we do have product that falls within that, and many of our buyers have accessed FLSP actually. So yes, and then we go a step above that. We also have product that falls a little bit in the upper affordable market.
Everything sounds almost too good to be true. And I know that that's never the story. There's always blood, sweat and tears behind the successes. And perhaps just again, from those design challenges or things that, you know, years on, you've really had to go back to the drawing board. What have been the elements that have really tested you and the design team in terms of whether it's cost or whether it's the wear and tear on materials or having to adapt something that actually 2-3 years on we recognize that this was a challenge? So is there anything that you've been picking up in that period which you've had to say, look, you know, this is something that we couldn't have foreseen? Having done it, we now realize that there's a different way or an alternative approach which is more effective.
The e-home that I mentioned previously that we've improved, it's specifically that the e-home has a double volume exterior space that's covered by a roof, but initially that space was about 2.2 meters wide, which didn't make it a usable space to park a car or a caravan or a trailer or something. For that reason, in the eHomes 2.0, we reconfigured the entire internal layout so that we could, within the same parameters, within the same site width of, I think, 7 meters, still have a 3-bedroom house, but that now offers a space in which the owner can park their car under a roof. And that roof also creates a sense of identity to the home because of the way it curves and the front side of the house slightly being curved in. There's a space that normally gets painted different colors, vibrant colors that speaks to an identity and ownership of the house. So we've learned a lot in the design. That's one of the things we've learned, but also in research and development. We continuously do research and development on our product and our building technology to make it quicker to build with and more cost effective. And that's something that's a continuous process that will hopefully never stop.
One or two things that we learned that were not blood, but sweat and tears.
You're allowed all three.
not with health and safety in South Africa. When we started the first construction of the very first e-homes, we would have been ready for construction late 2019, but we were not getting NHBRC approval. We were sitting on the approved building plans and we were not getting NHBRC approval. We had all the agreement and all the other things in place, so there was no real, like nobody could tell us why they're not approving it. And so at some point, I told the team, you know what, we just start. And we document everything. And we tell NHBRC, we play open cards. We say, guys, we cannot afford, after so many years of research development and so high expectations, and everybody is so excited to start, to now end 2019 and not have started building one house. That is just in terms of moral with the team and with our buyers and with the community, all the excitement, we cannot afford to end the year without having at least poured one or two foundations. So we played open cards with them and took a decision to go into ground without NHBRC enrollment. So then obviously, guess what? So first thing, when we come back in January, we get a little letter from NHBRC saying that if you don't stop immediately, they're gonna withdraw all our enrollments and certifications and all of that. So we had to stop until we had all of that fixed for not the two foundations we had poured. Those then went into late enrollment. That took about a year to get them unlocked again. But for the next units to build, it took until about mid-Feb, end-Feb 2020 to get those enrollments. So we then started with those. And when we were done with the excavation, we had the COVID lockdown. And so that was obviously something nobody could plan for. When COVID lockdown was over, we then were able to cast the next two foundations and put up the first raw panels. I don't really know what the good way is to describe that without showing it, but the raw panel is essentially our Citra building technology before it's plastered. It's a few panels that you put up. Today takes us about 1 or 2 days to put up a house with our panels. At the time, it took about 2 to 3 weeks. So we then took 2 to 3 weeks to put up the first two houses, those panels, and strapped them down according to engineer specifications. And the next morning we arrived, the house was 500 meters away, upside down in a pond, because at night the wind was a bit stronger than anticipated.
Welcome to Cape Town.
Yes, exactly. So I then said, okay, never mind. The first two foundations, they're blocked by an NHBRC. Then the next two units, we now need to kind of recover that EPS, those panels, and then bring them back. So never mind, let's do the next two foundations. So we started the next two units, then put up the EPS panel, stripped down a bit better, and then started plastering. And again, a bit of a learning between the engineers and us, some misunderstandings in terms of the propping and everything of the roof. So we plastered the roof, which is when we say plaster, it's a kind of a shotcrete that we put on top of the roof on the outside. But because of those misunderstandings with the engineers, the propping layout wasn't right. So the whole house sagged by about 50 mils or something, and the walls kicked by about 50 mils on the sides. So the engineers then said, yeah, that doesn't look very good. So we had to put that on hold as well, those two. Because again, never mind, we start the next two. So again, foundation went good. Putting up the EPS went good. Strapping down, then we propped it right before we started plastering the roof. So that was good. Next misunderstanding with the engineers was the curing then of the shotcrete of the roof. So 2 days after doing the shotcrete on the roof, the engineers do a site inspection and say, guys, that's not cured right, so we can't sign it off. So we said, okay, never mind, we'll fix that later. Let's start the next two. So I think it was like houses 10 and 11 or something like that, that in the end we were actually able to finish in one go and say, wow, okay, those are now done. And we then finished all the other, like from 10 to 26, and then at the end came back to the first ones that were then unlocked by NHBRC and redesigned by the engineers. Some of it we had to take down and redo. So in learnings, a lot of learnings and a lot of sweat and tear and a bit of money along the way.
And very much a living laboratory of doing, but also I think, again, just demonstrating the resilient attitude of we're going to go with this, and also recognizing that ultimately you're going to need that NHBRC. You're going to need them, but that you couldn't wait for them. We know that the regulatory space can be a challenging one for any developer. We know it comes with multiple different, not just the city, but province when it comes to things like environmental authorizations, etc. The journey that you've gone on and how things have over a period of time, particularly when you're coming with something new, how maybe relationships have changed and or understanding of what you're trying to achieve has changed.
There are various arms to the story. We still have huge challenges with various city departments who almost it feels like they are being obstructive, but we can't put our fingers on it. We have, on the other side, developed some really good relations with other departments who really, really are trying to help us and are very excited by what we're doing in the space. From our early days with NHBRC, we actually have come so far with them. We have such a great relationship with NHBRC. Wesgrow really try and assist us wherever we have hurdles, but we still do have some challenges within the city structures.
And Joel, from an environmental point of view, I think when I first met you, we talked about the location. It's surrounded by agricultural land and various wetlands, etc. How did the environmental process go? Was it a fairly straightforward process? I think you said you'd factored in the timing behind it, but I mean, just tell us a bit about that. I know it can be laborious.
So what we try to do is really have a multi-year perspective on how many houses we want to build every year, and we then work it back from there. And that means when we acquire land, it is very important for us to have a fair understanding in a conservative planning how long it will take to get those units out of the ground. And that means the first site we bought, which today is Central Blue, we bought from Old Mutual at the time where it already had its development rights in place. So we knew we don't have an answered question there that we cannot calculate the risk on. The second site that we then bought from Garden Cities, right next to the first site, was bare agricultural land, or actually not even agricultural land. It was unzoned. It had no zoning. It's one of those white spots in the title deed that historically just doesn't have a zoning, not even agricultural. That was the second site where we knew we have 5 to 10 years to get those zoning rights in place because we're still busy developing Central Blue next to it with rights to 1,800 units. So that's going to take us quite some time. And if it takes time to get environmental approvals on the second site, it's not an issue. And then the third site that we now purchased in Somerset West, again for 1,000 units, there we bought it about halfway through the approval process. So the approval processes had been, or the approvals had been applied for by the previous owner. They had not yet been approved, but we had, after conversations with the professional team, a fair understanding of the risks and the timelines involved there, so that we knew it would slot in at the right point in time for us to go out of the ground with the units. And that then gives us, in the end, a manageable pipeline of houses that we can then put into the market. And that then allows us to have the entire kind of production train going, where we have the design teams, our own engineering teams, our research development teams, our factory, our construction workers, the development teams, the marketing teams, the sales teams, because we have all of that in-house now. So that all of those have a 3-year planning horizon. They know next year how many units do we need to plan for, build for, produce for every year into the next 3 years, what changes we're going to do to the building technologies, where can we advance what aspect of the building technology, how can we reduce the costs further or the environmental impact further, and have like a multi-year perspective on the product development, which gives then again certainty to the investors when they put money in for research development. It's not a thing you just put in and you don't really know what comes from it. We say, okay, if we invest so much into improving the technology on this, we know within a year or two on those 2 or 3 or 4 phases in our developments, we can recover that investment into the further research development. So then the whole train starts moving in a well-coordinated manner.
So again, I guess a testimonial to realistic planning horizons and front-loading some of those expectations around the different regulatory elements.
Absolutely.
100%. We talked earlier about the introduction of a non-residential component within the development, and again, various design elements using containers that have been retrofitted, a whole sort of open space element. Tell us a bit about that and, again, some of the initial lessons. If you've pivoted from this idea of predominantly residential and now going into this, just some observations from the design space.
We decided on doing the container site, a commercial site, because there is a bigger commercial plan for the site. But in the meantime, we wanted to create a space for the community where they could have a more affordable retail and commercial offering. Because in a bigger shopping center that we plan to build, it's not always that affordable to the local market. So for that local market, the containers made a lot of sense. That is a space that they can then rent out for their office space, for retail, and also a little restaurant and internet cafe possibly. There was a lot of learning curves there as well. I think Cheryl can maybe add some more to the history of that, but just in working with an outside construction team that was not part of our in-house construction team, we had a little bit of difficulties there with us wanting a specific quality at the end and not obtaining that. So the process of building that site took a bit longer than initially anticipated, because we then moved over to our in-house construction team so that we could make sure that the quality is what we want in that site. And it was a bit of a push. We wanted to have most of it done for our festival, the Central Blue Festival that we host on an annual basis. The heads of the departments, myself, Cheryl, and Dwayne, who is heading up the construction, came together on a weekly basis to sit in on meetings and make decisions on the spot of how we are going to make this work and get it done for the festival so that we could host that festival for the community.
That's one of the exciting things that we've worked on this year in terms of what Nicole has just spoken about. We've brought most of the development process in-house, and the collaboration, whereas normally you would have an external marketing team, an external sales agent, external contractor, having it all in-house, the relationships created are very different to how it would be between developer and contractor if it was an external contractor or an external marketing team or an external architect. We are all on the same page, working towards the same end goal. So that makes for some quite exciting collaboration. And Centra Hub was the first project where we worked on as that team. And it was really exciting. The ideas that came out of that creative process were fantastic. And now to take that further into the housing process is really rewarding. Yeah.
We have had some challenges in the past, specifically when designing some of our homes with external consultants, being a bit more reluctant with it being an alternative building technology and taking a lot more time than we wanted to go back and reflect on the building technology and trying to understand it. In the past year, we've brought on an engineering department in-house. It's so much easier to design and engineer our homes because they are in the office next to us. As architects, we can walk over to them, get direct input immediately on how to best design these homes so that we know it can be constructed. And we can also phone the contractor and say, listen, is this detail feasible? Will this work? And also feasible in a financial sense, because we have the QSs in-house, both on a construction site and in the development site. So it makes for a very exciting collaborative process, which just adds to the quality and the design that we are able to offer to the clients.
I'm thinking back to that image you gave us, Joel, of your wife and yourself arriving with two suitcases at the airport from overseas. And yet here's Nicole describing a very much a sort of local ecosystem and neighborhood of built environment professionals now that are working. It's a lovely story. It really is. I know you've just come back, Joel, from one of the affordable housing seminar up in Windhoek in Namibia. Any thoughts or observations from those conversations that you had up there that either intrigued or excited you and that we should be thinking about?
The conference in Windhoek was, for me, very inspiring, because when working in our little cave here, and we're in our own echo chamber where we talk with all the members of our Citra family, how we call it. We generally speaking are on the same page. We all pull in the same direction and we think we know what we do. But then we look outside and it seems like almost we're the only ones who actually try to do something different and try to innovate. And that conference for me was inspiring because there were so many really brilliant people from across the continent, South Africa, but as well almost every country on the continent, plus people from the US and Europe that came. And yeah, everybody pulling in the same direction. So I would have loved to hire each and everyone right there. wouldn't have known what to do with all the people, never mind how to pay them. But no, they're really like-minded, brilliant people who put all their energy and dedication into trying to solve this massive challenge that we're working towards as well, which is there's about 200 million homes missing on this planet as we stand today. And it's growing every day. It's not the housing supply on a global scale is not keeping up with population growth, demographic, and as well people moving, because it doesn't help that maybe there is a surplus of houses in China. From what I read, they have homes for 3 billion people in China and a population of just over a billion, so they have a lot of empty stock. It doesn't help, because in Africa, people don't live in China. If it's on a global scale, if you add demographics and the housing supply, and it doesn't stack up, and a lot of the housing supply happens in countries where there is not so much of a backlog. That means on a continent like Africa or say the Indian subcontinent, it's an even bigger disaster that is building up. And seeing a conference with over 200 people there that are all like really thinking hard and really coming up with amazing solutions was really, really inspiring.
It's lovely the way you brought it back to that global context in recognizing, you know, our own needs here in South Africa. 2024 on the horizon. No doubt more big plans, more ideas, and more expansion. Tell us a bit about what's on that horizon.
2024, we're really looking forward to. Besides ramping up in Blue Downs, in Central Blue, we have a lot of inquiries from the United States and from Switzerland. And this is exciting for us because it's now one of the few instances where a technology that has been developed and tested in Africa can now be scaled back into the Western like industrialized countries. And what we really look forward to there is to firstly change the mindset of how people look at Africa. We will still have the headquarter here in Cape Town for the Swiss and the US operations, doing all the designs and the engineering and the research development here, with the idea to brand it like designed in Cape Town, built in Texas or wherever it will be built in the end. And to almost turn that like old Apple logo on its or slogan on its head, designed in California, made in China, where I kind of say, we're in the US, we're the smart guys, and then we give it to the cheap labor in China to build, which is quite a funny statement from that angle. To turn that on its head and say, we design and engineer it in Africa, in Cape Town, and we use the cheap US and Swiss labor to build it. So looking forward to that challenge. Obviously comes with a lot of intriguing questions of certifying a building technology there, going through the process with the laboratories and authorities in the respective countries. So that is the international perspective. There might be other projects. We have a lot of leads as well from across Africa that we're not yet really decided on if to pursue it already next year or the year after. And then in South Africa, the big thing that will happen is we're going to start building in Pinebrook, which is, the name is Pinebrook Estate, that we're going to launch towards the end of next year, but start construction early already next year. Pinebrook Estate is in Somerset West, 1,000 units. In the more middle to upper income market. So it doesn't cater for the same affordable market than Blue Downs. And there again, the aim is to see how the market responds to our building technology in the upper market, because it is actually so much better than brick and mortar. And we really enjoy the idea to bring that to the upper market, which will bring more pride to, for example, the owners in Central Blue that say they were the first to live in a Citra house. And now the people like in the villas in Somerset, they as well live in the same
house. So that's very exciting perspectives for 2024.
That scaling and that expansion goes way beyond just the numbers. It's really trying to get into the different markets and different segments. If you had to take a highlight from this journey you've been on over the last few years, what's that been for you? What's been the one thing that stands out where you, if it was all to end tomorrow, you could turn around and say, that was the moment?
I'm not sure if a moment, but what I really find heartwarming is to see that so many people in the end buy into that vision of trying to build a better future that is more than just making a house cheaper, but making it actually better through technology. And a lot of people now that are part of the vision that or part of this team that pull so strongly into that direction and come up with ideas and initiatives. And that is so nice. So every morning when I drive to the office, I drive here with a smile on the face, looking forward to work with the team. And I think that is really what makes a difference for me.
Fantastic. Thanks, Joel. Cheryl, your highlight?
Seeing Central Blue unfold from raw land and with our vision and particularly my passion for housing and affordable housing and my belief that you can create an affordable housing development that is not, you know, people often equate affordable with cheap and often people say, oh yes, you do those low cost houses and you keep I keep having to correct people. That's not what we do. Affordable housing is not that, and it can be quality. I've always been driven by quality affordable housing, quality finishes, and not just the home, but the space around that. We can offer security. We can make this work. We can have a safe environment where people have parks and trees and green spaces. And yes, we're still working on that. And COVID was very challenging, obviously. And we really felt like we were banging our heads against the wall at some point because new developer, there was commercial funding was not easy to come by. It took us, I think, a year or two to finally get that right. Then to start the first block of apartments. And now when I drive on site and I see the apartments and the townhouses and the e-homes and everything we've created, that we did it. We made this. We made it happen. And it's almost like it makes me very emotional. I'm very proud of what we've done there. And this was the prototype. So to know that we can do it now, we can take it forward into our next developments is something that I think we've achieved. We've achieved a lot to make this happen.
Nicole, your side?
It is a lot what Cheryl said. When you drive in Blue Downs, you feel a sense of community. You see the kids playing in their front yards, and that to me means so much. Buying a house, for most people, that's the biggest step that they will ever take in their life, especially in the affordable market. Ensuring that it's a home that they can be proud of, that's well designed and caters to their lived experience, the way people want to live, is so important. And being able to do it in a company that I believe has the ability to do it on a global scale is inspiring, because I know I'm not just making a difference in Blue Downs, but in the long term, we're going to make a big difference on a global scale.
Fantastic. Bringing it again back to the global picture and the importance of this affordable housing issue within the world as well as South Africa. It's really difficult to understand a lot of what's been talked about without really being able to see it and visualize it. I know you've just released, I think you call it the picture book, which goes through some of those design approaches. If you've enjoyed listening to this and you want to go and see what it looks like and why it's different, where should people go?
So I think the first place, Pete, is obviously our Citra website. And there you will see not only what we're doing in the affordable space, but prototypes of houses and structures that we're doing in other spaces. And so Citra website, Citra also has obviously a Facebook and an Instagram page. Insta probably a better place to go than Facebook. And then in Central, if you want to look at Central Blue specifically, that development, there is a link on the Citra website, but it also has its own Facebook page, Instagram, as well as its own website. that will give you an idea of the type of products that we are building and selling there, as well as the bigger picture around all the sustainability initiatives, etc., which also you will see on the Citra website a lot of mention of what we're about and what we're trying to achieve from also from that sustainability point of view, not only in the Citra product, but in what we call our e-states, which are our larger developments.
Is that citra.co.za?
Yes.
So citra.co.za. Yeah. Thanks, Cheryl. To the three of you, thanks so much for your time and consideration this morning. I know you've got a very important meeting this afternoon, Joel, with the funders. Good luck with that. More strength to you and the team. Good luck with what you're doing. And I do hope we get a chance maybe in the new year to come back and continue the conversation, continue reflecting on what's working, and more importantly, what's starting to contribute in this affordable housing space. Good luck to the three of you.
Thanks, Pete.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed this content of the Talking Transformation podcast. Please feel free to give us feedback via our Twitter platform. That's at Talking Transfo and the number one. Or alternatively, via our email address, talkingtransformation101@gmail.com. Thanks in recognition also to Tribal Need for allowing us to use their track, Flags, as our introductory and closeout music on this podcast.